Good morning, church. Actually, Eli, great morning to each of you. I'm so excited about this morning, I can't even get it out. So the grace of peace and peace of the Lord Jesus Christ be with you on this fifth Sunday of our Lenten journey, seeking honest questions for a deeper faith. Over the last 4 weeks in our series, we have experienced Jesus in the wilderness and asked the question, whose voice will you listen to? Followed by the story of Nicodemus and Jesus, how do we begin again? The following week, we had the story of the Samaritan woman at the well. Will you give me a drink? And then last week, the healing of a man born blind and the question of whose sin? And if you remember to last week, adventures in missing the point. And today, we have another familiar story in the raising of Lazarus from John chapter 11. And we picked it up in the story just after Lazarus's passing. And Jesus enters the story to comfort the sisters of Lazarus, and that is Mary and Martha. And again, a significant part of our story, and it's the shortest verse of our story, Jesus wept. It is why Hudson then painted added some water to the eyes, to the eye here, representing the tears that Jesus would have had as he wept alongside Mary and Martha after he is moved in spirit and deeply troubled. About 2 months ago, my friend Ty, he told me, he just mentioned, he goes, "Hey, Eric, you need to meet a guy that I met at this gathering that happens on Thursday mornings in Peoria, called Heaven in Business." Carrie Rao is also part of this group, I believe. And his name is Roosevelt, and he has a compelling life and a compelling story. Well, it took about 4 to 5 weeks to get this on the calendar for he and I to meet. And then I invited both him and my good friend and pastor, Pastor Irene Lewis Wimbley, from the executive director from Southside Community Center, and we met at One World. I was blessed, completely blessed, to hear a portion of Roosevelt's story and to learn about his life, and it deeply moved me, it deeply touched me. That was about 3 weeks ago. Then on Monday, when I sat down to consider our passage today, the bringing back to life of Lazarus, I was like, the parallels in these two stories, you can't miss. So, I preached this text 3 years ago, and it's actually the first sermon that was done in as part of shelter in place with the pandemic. First video-only sermon in that early season of COVID-19. So we have this story here again 3 years later, and we enter it once more. And rather than preaching this familiar story again, why not engage with it, and as we hear it together this morning, in the form of a contemporary story that has so many touch points and parallels with the story of Lazarus. Another text from our lectionary passages for this grouping of Sunday is the Valley of Dry Bones. This is found in the Old Testament book, prophetic book of Ezekiel. There God asked the prophet Ezekiel, "Can these bones live?" Bones that have been lying there for years and years and years, lifeless and with much decay. And it invites us to consider if we believe in new life, can new life come after death? Where do we find hope when things are bleak? Where do we find hope when things are quite simply hopeless? Do we or can we trust God's work of resurrection, raising that which was dead to new life? Well, Ty and I met with Roosevelt again on Wednesday, this time at Avani's. One World is a little better. But Avani's, and he has graciously agreed to be here this morning. And not him only, but he's joined by his wife, Tanya over here, and goddaughter,
Carol.
Thank you. So Tanya and Carol are with us this morning as well. And it's quite a story. And so this past week, I found this article from the University of Michigan Law School. I had an article on their website back in January that gives much detail of Roosevelt's story, because we don't have time to cover it all here. So you can find that in the weekly. There is a longer story, one that includes his wife and best friend, Tanya. It's called The Big House and the Picket Fence, found in the Chicago Reader. I have put this QR code, so you have permission right now to grab your smartphone, scan the wall, and this will take you to a website that has the article, much longer article, okay? Now, scan it, but then put your phone away. And then read it later, just read it later, okay? Read it later, so after the service. So if you want to do that, you can. It's hard to even just get through the story because it's so moving and heart-wrenching, yet beautiful, and all the things, all the emotions. So, without further ado, we want to welcome Roosevelt Miles up as we dialogue about his life, the story of Lazarus, and just how the Spirit through Roosevelt's life might even challenge us, encourage us, or inspire us to also respond to the voice of Jesus that says, come out and experience new life. So, Roosevelt, come on up, and let's just kind of be an interview. Yeah. Interview format, yeah. So, all right. Roosevelt, you, thanks for being here.
Thank you. Thank
first
you.
And foremost. So, can you guys hear his mic?
Hello?
Yeah, there we go. Cool. Awesome. I wonder if we might start with your life before the age of 28, when the incident happened that led to your arrest. Okay. So what was life like for you growing up? Where did you grow up and family and so on and so forth?
I grew up in Chicago, west side of Chicago. I come from a two-parent home, two siblings, which is I'm the youngest, they are older. Always worked for Chicago Park District. But everything was not grand. I wasn't that person that I was tamed to be by the public. I was a good kid growing up. Baseball team, Boy Scouts, graduated out of high school, went to junior college.
Okay.
I did all the normal things that a young man should do in life.
Mm-hmm. And you had siblings?
Yes. Got a sister and a brother.
Okay. Older, younger?
I'm the youngest.
You're the youngest?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So, and you said this is the west side of Chicago?
West side of Chicago.
Okay. All right. And your mom's name is Martha?
Yes,
which I know that.
Is.
And then your dad's name is?
Roosevelt. I'm a junior.
Okay, Roosevelt. And we have their picture up here. So this is a picture of the parents.
Mom and dad.
Yep, right there. So, and then in November of 1992, okay, there was an attempted armed robbery and a shooting in Chicago that happened in your vicinity.
Yes,
okay,
indeed.
You were down the block, which ended in the taking of the life of the 16-year-old Sherarian Brandon. Okay, and through many unforeseen circumstances and upsetting course of events, you were singled out as the assailant and was charged with first-degree murder and attempted robbery. And there's more on this timeline in the weekly, okay? We don't have time to cover it all. But I was wondering, Roosevelt, if you could take us back to that 28-year-old man. And I can't imagine. What that was like, right?
Never.
And just would you be willing to share about the encounters of that, what happened? And because life as you knew it was over because of this.
So. Yes, well, it happened on November 15th, cold night, and I was going to a motorcycle club, shoot pool in the tournament. The shooting happened almost two blocks away from where I was at.
Okay. Two blocks away?
Mm-hmm. I had an alibi witness that the police never interviewed because they couldn't place me where I was at. I didn't think life was over with because I didn't know the damage that this would cause me when they arrested me. So when I went to prison, I studied my law.
Okay.
And that's when I became a paralegal to fight. My case is not normal. I'm not normal. This has made me a different person. Due to the fact that what happened should have never happened to me. Mm-hmm. And the police knew they were wrong, what they done to me. But in order to move up in ranks, I had to be the scapegoat.
Okay.
And I was made a scapegoat in order for this one detective to become lieutenant. And it's a sad story because if you guys read my story, it tells everything about it from day one. Multiple stories have been written about me from BuzzFeed News to Chicago Crusader, Chicago Reader, and Jewish Current, which is the one that's big house in a picket fence. It has certain details in there that would explain everything, because like Pastor say, we don't have time, and it takes time for me to explain this. I mean, it can be a series, a TV series, to go into things that I have been through during this journey. And you talk about Lazarus,
mm-hmm.
and you talk about the two people for Lazarus that was in Lazarus' life.
Yep.
I had three, actually four: God, my wife, my mom name, which is Martha, and my sister.
Okay.
They helped me pull through this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that was my next question. So our story begins with Jesus comforting the friends and family of Lazarus, right? The Mary and Martha there, for they had been mourning for 4 days. And then Jesus knows he's gonna raise Lazarus from the dead, and yet he weeps. This is empathy, right? He weeps alongside Mary and Martha for the loss, for what they were experiencing. And so the question that, so you had people in your life, how would you articulate with this devastating reality Jesus' response then? And how did Jesus maybe meet the Mary and Marthas in your life? What was Jesus' response?
Jesus' response, wow. Every day.
Okay. Should we try a handheld microphone? Can we try the handheld mic just real quick? So, don't want that to happen again. So, it's awesome. So, let's try this. We'll see. There you go. All right, check. Let's try that.
Microphone check. Okay.
Okay. Sorry about that. Yeah, just Jesus' response to, because this played out is in November, but it played out in those early days.
Always believe in God. There's no doubt about it. So I prayed that this day would come to an end. And every night I prayed. And he delivered me. He helped me and guided me through this. Because without him, I couldn't have made it, to be honest with you. I had people to support me, to help me. But God, he was there for me 24. I knew I always had his hand in my back when I decided to fall and give up, but I couldn't. I had to prove myself. And the only way I can do that is believe in him and keep fighting. I always had a word that you see a guy jogging on the yard, and I always ask him, what are you saying? And he stopped one day and told me what he was saying. He's saying, God say, never stop, never stop, never stop. And I never stopped. And I still haven't stopped to the day. So he always been a forefront in my life. And I'm blessed to be a child of God. Because without him, it wouldn't have been possible.
Thank you, Roosevelt. Thank you. There's a verse in the story of Lazarus that we just took in. Jesus, once more deeply moved, came to the tomb, and it was a cave with a stone laid across the entrance. Take away the stone, Jesus says. Take away the stone. And as I have understood your story from 1992, when the incident first happened, all the way to 2017, you didn't necessarily experience anyone who would come to your tomb, that is the prison cell, asking on your behalf to take away the stone, right? But then, because you had a series of public defenders who maybe caseload, not caring, whatever it may be, right? Just not responding to your case, that did not come and say, take away the stone. But in 2017, that changed, right? And you were introduced to someone who said, came to your tomb and said, take away the stone. So would you share a little bit about her and her team? And
That's interesting. That's interesting, because my wife would have more to say about it than me, because I had got a number from somebody, and it was a lawyer's number, and I had been searching for her, but I couldn't find her in Shepherd. I couldn't find her nowhere. I'm looking in the law dictionary. I can't find her, and I almost gave up. But then I gave the number and address and name to my wife, and she searched it. And we found out the reason I couldn't find it, because she's one of the Illinois lawyers. She was in New York. So I was looking at everything in Illinois, not New York. And when she searched it and found it and got in touch with her name is Jennifer Bonjean, and right now she's the number one lawyer in the country. And she wrote her. She called her, I wrote her, and something happened, because she had a secretary that slipped my files in her briefcase while she was on her way to, I think it was New Jersey. Anyway, she was on her way to New Jersey, slipped it in a briefcase, and asked her to call and asked her to read it. So she went over it, I guess, and they had a meeting about me. She was on the phone with her. And they was just telling her, well, we having a meeting about Roosevelt. So just so I called. I didn't know who to call. I called. So I was at the forefront of that meeting that was about me that I didn't even know about. And she asked me a slew of questions. I answered them. And it just overwhelmed them with what was going on with me in the criminal court system. And that day, she became my lawyer. But not only that day she became my friend. And she took my case. Now imagine, this is the number one lawyer in the country. She took my case for free. And she delivered me from prison. But I delivered myself as well. You can't see the fact that I am a paralegal. So I put myself in court. And I got a reverse and a remand in 2000 before anyone came to my rescue. God put me in. And he taught me to read the law and learn the law. So when I met her in 2017, I was already in court. And I was always on my way home, because the credentials that I incurred in court, being a paralegal, certified seamstress, certified baker, it allowed me to get good time. But the same token, she prepared my motion and the courts overturned it at the same time that my time was due. I was coming home. So everything worked in order. Mm. Came home in 2020, and she's been my lawyer since. And she's still my lawyer.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, and you kind of alluded to this just a second ago. So you're in for 28 years.
Correct.
28 years. Wrongfully convicted. That's half, because you're 59 now?
No, I'm 58. It'll be 59 in July.
Sorry.
But I came home.
So that's half your life.
Half my life, 28 years in prison, and it took me 28 years to come home.
So you're in for 28 years, and you, I could see just, you know, the frustration and the anger and, you know, all the emotions, right? But you didn't just sit there. You didn't just rot in the cell.
No.
You got busy. You got active.
Yes, yes.
So
yes.
Share with us a little bit about what some of the programs that you took care advantages of, and you know, you just said paralegal and that kind of thing. So, what was the experience of attaining all that you could attain?
Well, I did it by prison. When I went to Stateville, that's a receiving. I did 2 years in Stateville. While I was in Stateville Correctional Center, I earned my paralegal certificate. So I got moved to Menard, where I became a certified seamster. Then I left Menard and went to Illinois Rivers and became a certified baker, certified by the United States Department of Labor. So while I was in prison, I never counted the days. I made the days count. So each day I did something better and better to prove myself. I mean, many articles from the towns that I have been in the prison, writing about me and the things that I have achieved. It was a long journey, but you have to put your mind somewhere else. I wasn't bitter. You can't be bitter, because if you're bitter, you can't work, you can't do anything. So basically, I put my mind at ease and worked. And as I worked, I did my legal work. And the wardens always tell her when she came to see me, if I want him, he in three places, on a visit, at work, or in a law library. And that was my days. And this went on and on for years after years after years. Because I know one day it'll pay off, and it did.
Mm-hmm. So when we were at lunch on Wednesday with Ty, you said two things that really just sort of struck me. One thing is, and you just alluded to it, I don't wake up today bitter. I don't wake up today bitter. That was one. The other thing that you said was that God saved my life twice. And now I want to pay it forward. So the question, or, you know, so say more about today, your desires, your passions, now that you've not only been released, but also fully exonerated back on December 5th of,
right,
of 2022. And there's no odor of a criminal record that trails you anymore because of the exoneration.
Correct.
Right? And so you have this new life here and now. And so what do you want your life to be about?
Well, like I say, my life is not normal, and it's not complicated either. Each day I wake up and I work a job that I really don't want to be in, because when I had the X on my back, they took advantage of me, and I do everything, and I learn everything, and they found out that I know a lot, so they use it to their advantage, but keep me at a low. That's not my passion. My passion is to be part of the communities. My passion is to give back once where I took it from. I have been going to these classes or whatever, meetings about cure violence. And when I come in the door, it's like I'm an outcast because don't nobody know me. I want to bid for the contract because this is real to me. This is not a paycheck. This is something that I want to do. Because I look at how many lives have been destroyed because of violence. 2 weeks ago, I was on my way to work. I got on 74, driving about 60 miles, 65 miles. And I looked at my odometer, and I was just doing 35 and 40. My mind was gone. God was speaking to me. And I went to work. I stopped in the gas station, give me a coffee. I stood up making coffee like 10 minutes, and they were wondering, what are you doing? But they know me, so they know something on my mind. I got to work. I went to work, and I didn't work. I walked up and down the aisle for at least 35, 40 minutes, thinking. God just was, he was all in me. So I called my wife, and I was explaining to her what was going on. I was crying, and she told me that God's working his ways. He's calling you to do your passion, and I don't want to do this job. I want to be in these neighborhoods saving our youth, because them is my future. And that day I called another friend of mine, Jim, who introduced me to the group, Heavens and Business. And he talked to me for 45 minutes and he prayed for me. And we prayed together. After that day, I knew I felt better. But the thing is, it was the next day after I just met you and Pastor Irene. So things were just taking advantage of me. I was overwhelmed with emotions because I knew what I was supposed to be doing. And I'm still chasing that passion today. I want to work with the youth. I want to be a part of my neighborhood. I want to be a part of my community. I just want to be a part of everything that's dealing with youth and bringing them home and bringing them up. Because I just met another guy. He's a supervisor for the Department of Juveniles. And I want to get a meeting with him. I want to go in and talk to the juveniles as well. Because without resources, there's nothing. And I want to gain these resources. I want to have a community center where they can go in and learn things, learn trades, learn how to vote. God's given me this chance. And when he saved my life twice, he saved me from the streets. And as she says, he put me up for her, then released me to her. But when he released me to her, I had another incident where I fell asleep on the highway doing 70 miles an hour in a water tanker driving. I crossed all the way over to the next meeting, going the opposite direction in rush hour, and then get a scratch on the truck. It's like God parted the highway and stopped the traffic and allowed me to move across. That's the second time he saved my life. And he allowed me to get the things in life that I need to move forward. I've done my work. Now it's time for me to do his work.
Mm. Awesome. Thank you. Thank you. At the end of our story with the raising of Lazarus, it says this in verse 44, the dead man came out, his hands and feet wrapped with strips of linen and the cloth around his face. Jesus said to them, take off the grave clothes and let him go. You took off the prison-issued garb and you were finally let go in 2020. But then fully exonerated in December of 22, a couple years later. And now you have a new life with your wife.
True.
Yep. So I'm wondering what words, and you've described your passions and what you want to be, what your life to be about now. I'm wondering what you might have for us in the words of encouragement or challenge to us individually or as a church community. You know, because we all, in our own different ways, have experienced seasons of valley of dry bones. And we all have, in our different ways, have fallen asleep. Because perhaps it's been a while since we've heard Jesus' voice. This is true in my life. I go through this. This is not about comparison of stories. That's not what this is. It's just we understand. And so what would you maybe encourage us with this morning for any individual or a church community and just in general?
It seems like it's a great church. And I know I met this pastor, and I was overwhelmed how young he was, and we was just talking about things. People in general need to give people second chances, no matter what. We have to accept people, and we have to give back to people who don't know how to understand what giving is all about. And guide them. Mm. You talk about thou neighbor, it's thou communities. We shall help others and watch others grow. I myself, I'm over compassion. I think I do more for other people than I do for myself at times. Do I feel bad? No, I don't. So we must look and help others. That's the only thing I can say. The church is there. The church is going to be a church. And the doors, I know, are always open.
Okay. The doors are always open in the church.
Yes, sir.
Yeah. I like what you said there about, just giving people second chances.
You have to.
Yeah. And I was talking with Marge earlier, before the service, and just about the power of story and understanding one's story and how important that is in our relationship with them, right? Because we have assumptions and we have we think we know about someone, but and honestly, I think we've lost that gift in the social media world, right? Right, the art of the relationship, face to face, story to story, right? And so, thank you for just reminding us to do that.
You have to. Mm-hmm. God got us here for a reason.
Yeah.
Not a season, a reason.
You said God is here for a reason.
God have us for a reason.
Okay.
Not a season. So yep. When I say that, I mean that he want us to be for others.
To be for others, yeah.
You know, he's for us. We're children of God. And we got to pay it forward. We have to.
Amen. Amen. Well, I think I speak for everyone here gathered this morning. Thank you. Thank you
welcome.
For coming to share of
you're
your
welcome.
Story. We praise God alongside you for all the ways that he has taken your story and is actively redeeming it each and every day. Actively redeeming it each and every day. What is true for Roosevelt is true for you as well. Let us just show some appreciation to Roosevelt. Thank you.
Thank you, everybody.
All right. Love you, brother. Thank you. Awesome. Well done. Yeah, thanks. Cool. Well, I want to share one more thing before we go to prayer and sharing. Back in May of 2022, there was a special delegate assembly in which there were four resolutions that were considered. Some required voting, some required, one was what they call a study resolution. And the resolution is for justice in the U.S. criminal legal system. This is May 28th. At its inception was 2021, but then they had it in 2022 as well. So here's a summary. Just want to read this, and then we'll move to prayer and sharing. As a historic peace church, Mennonite USA is called to resist injustice in all forms and in all places. Many aspects of the current United States criminal legal system cause pain and suffering for many, especially poor people and people of color. The U.S. criminal legal system, at its core, promotes violence and punishment, not reconciliation and peace. We're here, we hear this from the voices of those currently and formerly incarcerated, calling for justice from their families who yearn to be whole, from people of color who are discriminated against and hurt by this system. The violence of the U.S. criminal legal system will not and cannot bear fruits of justice and peace. A just world will only come through following the life and teachings of Jesus. I'll say that one again. A just world can only come through following the life and teachings of Jesus. For too long, we have ignored the teachings of Jesus as they apply to the criminal legal system. Jesus calls us to help the poor, the sick, and the oppressed. I was in prison. You came to visit me. Matthew 25. We confess that too often we have ignored that call. At the beginning of his ministry, Jesus reads from the prophet Isaiah, saying, "The Spirit of the Lord is upon me, because he has anointed me to bring good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim release to the captives and recovery of sight to the blind, to let the oppressed go free, and to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor." Then Jesus declares, "Today this scripture has been fulfilled in your hearing," Luke chapter 4. As Christians, we are called to look at Jesus and the prophetic tradition of the Bible for our vision of justice. We, like every generation of the church before us, are called to do our part, empowered by the Spirit that raised Jesus from the dead, to advance God's all-encompassing shalom on earth as it is in heaven. And here's the resolution. We as a church body commit to confronting the injustice within the current U.S. criminal legal system. There are many ways individuals, congregations, conferences, institutions, and agencies of the denomination can participate. The following is a starting place to begin this work together. One, learning about the injustices of the U.S. criminal legal system through conversations, book groups, guest speakers, and other means. Speaking with and learning from current and former prisoners, as well as others from the U.S. criminal legal system who have been harmed. Utilizing curricula, addressing a curriculum, addressing the injustices of the U.S. criminal legal system put out by MCC, MCUSA, Healing Communities USA, to guide local churches through discussions about the U.S. criminal legal system and ways to help those who are hurt by it. Supporting the families of those who have been incarcerated. Learning about our legal system has been shaped by racist assumptions, and we should be committed to dismantling racism wherever we see it. There's a few other ones here. Continuing to call for the ban of the death penalty at the state and federal levels. Working for reform of the criminal legal system to promote accountability and reconciliation. I encourage you to check out the rest of the resolution, for there are appendices tied to it. So this is on this denomination's mind. And we have the invitation to move in these ways. That will be the end of our sermon portion, and we'll move to our prayer and sharing time. Thank you.
I invite you to grab your bulletin. There's a confession, a prayer of confession in there. We will read this together in unison.